Welcome to the Girl Scout Advantage podcast, a podcast where we educate, empower, and share the stories of the Girl Scout experience. Join us to rediscover the magic of leadership, teamwork, and personal discovery. The Girl Scout Advantage, a podcast where you will learn how the Girl Scouts Heart of Michigan creates successful girls for today who will become the leaders of our tomorrow.
Welcome to another episode of the Girl Scout Advantage podcast. I'm your host, Brenna Smith, and today I am here with Amy Corder, who is a Girl Scout alum and a certified EOS implementer, which EOS stands for the Entrepreneurial Operating System. And so Amy gets to really help businesses and organizations kind of put systems in place to help them to really thrive and reach their goals. So Amy, thank you so much for being here with me today. So to get us started, would you mind just giving us an overview, your background, kind of how you got to where you are today?
Yes. As people ask about my career journey, I often say it's a career scavenger hunt, I think, because I've had just a wonderful set of opportunities. I've always say the harder I work, the luckier I get, and I've been in great places that kind of got me to the next great place. So, I started out grew up in a rural high school, and my parents hadn't gone to college, so I'm a first generation at college and really wanted to kind of dig in and find my path, only to find out that I had too many paths, too many things that I liked. My mom used to say, if you were, you know, putting your foot in a door, somewhere would it be? And I said, I don't know, I'm an octopus. I have to figure out all the different things I like. But having said all that, I went into initially an entrepreneurial kind of a path. And that's partially because I grew up in an entrepreneurial business. My dad had his own businesses, and I loved watching his blood, sweat, and tears and how he thrived in that. And so I also recognized that if I wanted to talk to my dad, I'd had to see him before 6 in the morning or after midnight if it was during the busy time of his year. So I always thought, I'd like to do that, and I want to see more just so I know there's got to be an easier path. So I started out with using my minor out of college, which was computer science, and joined a company that was entrepreneurial but growing like crazy. And we basically grew to be more than $1 billion, multi-billion over time, marketing services company so we served people. I love serving, so I love having alignment with that kind of a vision and value system. And so I ended up, as we went public, we were traded on the New York Stock Exchange at a point and continued on. And so I led two publicly traded divisions, one in technology and one in telecommunications. So had a real technical background to my very liberal arts education and my desire to kind of figure out what I wanted to do, which was really more about teaching and psychology. So throughout my journey, I've always used all of those things. So for all of the advisors and deans of students who told me I had to get my card signed by all these different people to take all these different classes, when they always asked what I was going to do, I said, I don't know, but I'm going to be happy doing it. So that was a great start for me. I then said, I want to go back into maybe a smaller organization again and maybe not use my tech skills as much as some of my people skills, although by then I was leading hundreds of people and they were global, so I used a lot of people skills, believe me. But I then, after having been a now 40-plus year volunteer with the Civil Air Patrol, I then found, though, that somebody kind of pulled me in that direction. So I know that often we go in those directions when I think the statistics say, especially there's a gender bias, females tend to go to an opportunity because somebody says, hey, we want you to do this. So take advantage of those. Somebody sees something in you that you may not see. And so I ended up putting my hat in the ring to be the national commander of the Civil Air Patrol. So I ended up leading over 61,000 volunteers all across the United States and Puerto Rico. And as I, did that, first female, still first female to reach the second star. I'm a 2-star general in the Civil Air Patrol. It was just wonderful. The mission there was saving lives. We do about 80-some percent, almost 90% of all the search and rescue in the United States is handled by the Civil Air Patrol as the auxiliary of the Air Force, so as civilians flying and searching. And then also we have a aerospace education mission, and I love education, so that fit really well with me, and as well a cadet program. So in my tenure at the national level, I had 28,000 cadets. So got to work with scouts in different ways, community service, things like that. Always loved that, and try to do more of that even, and get that instilled in the organization from my position. And then after having been that kind of CEO of Civil Air Patrol Inc., which is the nonprofit, but when we were federalized, we are the official Air Force Auxiliary, so I was a national commander. So in that kind of weird dual-headed role, I was glad to have had those opportunities, and then really glad to actually finish that term having quadrupled the safety record and having been credited with saving over 400 lives during my tenure as national commander, and not to mention created great programs and missions and really got to do some wonderful things for everyone from my 12-year-old cadets all the way through to my 80-year-old volunteers. And then I said, okay, now I'm serious. I need to get back to smaller business. So that's when I decided to start my own business, because just to really help other people, and kind of found my path through initially doing some contract roles in organizations. It's kind of my joke of my path, from, you know, chief operating officer, and, you know, I had been a chief information officer, I was a chief financial officer, so I always joke that I've been a CEO, a COO, a CIO, a CFO, wasn't smart enough to get a sales title that actually had a C in it. I was so silly because I was that top sales leader, but I've been all of those, and I always thought I would be, after all of that, an EIEIO next, but I am a certified EOSI, so that might be as close as it gets, so I think I've landed where I belong now, Brenna.
That's wonderful. I always love to hear that story, Amy, and I think it's really cool, especially for our girls to hear your story, and just know that is possible for them, you know, because so often you need to see someone who, you know, has kind of charted the path for you, and especially having been the first woman in the Civil Air Patrol as a national commander. I mean, that is just, it's so powerful. So always love to hear your story. So now let's back it up to your Girl Scout experience. So tell us a little bit about, you know, when you were a Girl Scout, maybe some of the memories you have. Tell us a little bit about that.
Sure. So yeah, lots of memories, all great. So that's wonderful. I did tell Brenna, you know, this was only a podcast, so I didn't feel compelled to, but I do still have my sash with my badges and all of that on it, so I almost wore it, so that could still happen. Yeah, loved my time as a Girl Scout. That was just a great way to get an organized, you know, activity set, a group of people that, you know, just were wonderful that I could be a part of every week, and gave me a different set of friends. We lived, again, in this more rural area, kind of in between the city of Flint and Swartz Creek, this little more rural town. So so kind of being in between all that, it was nice to go back into Swartz Creek and have this Girl Scout troop. And so I started out as a Brownie. My older sister was in the Scouts too, so there was a lot of competition at cookie sailing time. So my little red wagon and I made a lot of trips all over, as far as my mother would let me take that, to sell and deliver. And in fact, one of the fun parts of my career, as I talked about being a sales and marketing leader at one point, was that I ended up in that position, quite frankly, because I went in to handle an operational contract, just as a contract. I was just going to go and work for a couple months, whatever, contractor, and interviewed with the executive team, but the CEO wasn't there that day. He had a something happen, I think it was a car accident actually, and couldn't be there, so I had to come back. So I had fully interviewed for this operations thing and thought, great, I can help you with that. I've done this type of thing before. I would love to help. And then came back in, and so it was really just kind of a partial interview, so there was no like segue. We popped in the room, and the CEO started asking me some questions, and I answered them, and then all of a sudden, all the other people were quiet, and all guys, all were quiet, and then he started asking me about when did I first sell, which I'm sure it wasn't as pregnant of a pause as I thought, because I remember just thinking, what? How? What's that? Where did that come from? I mean, I love different interview questions, but come on. And instead of saying, well, sir, I'm actually here to, you know, help with operations, I said, well, if you're asking, my first sales gig was actually selling Girl Scout cookies with my little red wagon, dragging it down the street. And I, at one point, I know, was the top salesperson. And so, yes, those skills that we learned as, you know, from for me, a Brownie Junior Girl Scout on through really helped. And yes, I did get that sales position. It was the first time I'd ever led sales, and ended up in less than 1 year, we more than doubled their sales in that part of the business, and they had never seen growth like that in their entire existence as a company. And so maybe I took all of what I learned about selling cookies to heart, but I definitely you know, was able, with my team, it was all about a team, to really turn them into folks who wanted to serve, and it really helped well.
You put those cookie skills to work. I love it. So one of the things that you said when you were talking about kind of your pathway and how you got to where you are today was this passion you have for helping other people, and that is a line in the Girl Scout promise. And so I wanted to touch on that a little bit and see, you know, is that something that you feel was instilled in you because of Girl Scouts, or maybe it's a family value that was kind of built upon in Girl Scouts? Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yes, I think you nailed it. It really was both that then got built upon. So yeah, my parents, as much as I said, my dad worked, you know, 6 days a week, crazy, crazy hours. He also, and then on Sunday we were at church, and you know, if the boiler needed fixing, it was my dad in his suit and Amy with a flashlight helping downstairs too. So certainly it was something I saw, and you know, as we have those role models. So some of us have them at home, some of us find them in the Scouts. Maybe, you know, our parents are just not in a position to support us the way that, you know, day in, day out, you know, I had some of the opportunity for. So, yeah, so having that ability to see that, and my mother, who actually started the community education program in our little area. My mother went to downtown Flint, met with the founder, the funder of the program, and started it. And he, C.S. Mott said, that's great, Mrs. Corder. I think that makes sense. And yes, we could bring more education to that area, and that would be powerful and great. We want you to do it. And my mom said, I wasn't prepared to step up to do that. I've got kids at home. And he said, well, you know, here's a salary. And she said, oh, no. But if you're going to give me that money, I'm going to tag it into the program. We're going to do more classes. Mm-hmm. So my mother didn't take a salary. We were not well off. So, you know, it was a great commitment on her part. And we started that. And I got to help a little bit in that as well. So all of that volunteerism, then for me, I loved you know, just you learn some of it in Scouts. What, you know, I do remember, you know, cleaning up, you know, outside areas, and you're like, here's a bag, here's stuff, okay, and which I again kept doing in my life. I kind of don't walk past things that need to be done, and so all of that brought me to at a point then finding the Civil Air Patrol after I kind of aged out of some other things, and found that, you know, search and rescue, and we can volunteer and we can learn. And so that's how I continued in that path. So a 40-year plus volunteer in that program now, again, as well. And just love helping. And it's also, whether I'm volunteering or getting paid for it, I always feel like it's the same stuff, and I bring the same to it. So that's another thing to think about. You know, if you're kind of doing something, think about whether you really want to do it. You know, find things that align with your passions. And so, you know, I love the Girl Scouts. I love Civil Air Patrol. I loved the missions of the organizations that I've been a part of, and also in business. If a mission doesn't align, or the way that someone's conducting themselves in business doesn't align, I find something other, you know, elsewhere to do. So I think it's really important to be able to live our passions as well as align with our values, because if we don't have those fit, then I don't think we can ever truly be healthy, happy, and satisfied.
Yeah, I totally agree. And one word that I would absolutely use to describe you would be helper, you know, because you are always so willing to help, you know, other businesses and organizations and just to give back. And it's definitely one of the top things that I think of when I think of Amy. So, so I know you recently reconnected with your troop leader. So can you tell us a little bit about that?
I would love to do that. So I'm not as much a social media person, except it is the only way I would know where my nephews and nieces are. So I have to do that. But and so through that, I'm not, you know, quite as active in it. But I did have, I am connected with the Girl Scouts Heart of Michigan Facebook page, though, as you all should be. There you go. Yeah, but I try to be a top fan. So, yeah, so I, along the way, though, I started connecting more. People were finding me through my, like, high school connections, maybe, things like that, which is a long time ago, folks. And at one point, all of a sudden, and her last name is different now. She's been remarried and all this stuff. And I literally looked and I thought, oh, that's her. I looked at the picture and I thought, oh, my goodness. And so I sent a message and said, are you my Brownie troop leader? And she said, oh, my goodness, how are you? And we had this great conversation and just back and forth on messages, and was really, really fun. So it's cool to see that, you know, now we have more ways to be connected. Then I moved away. I moved for my career, moved for my education, then moved for my career and moved around. And so it's fun to be able to have those lifelong connections and just be able to jump right back into it. That was a lot of years in between. And so, and we talked about cookie sales and we talked about the cool things now, in addition to cookies, that the Girl Scouts is doing. So I hope folks get involved and find the other parts of the program.
Do you have any memories that kind of stick out about this troop leader, you know, things that you felt like maybe she did for you or she did for the troop?
Yeah, she was, I liked how she asked us what we wanted to do, because we were not a fully aligned, all headed in the same direction troop of girls, as probably nobody is, right? That we all have, you know, okay, well, I'd rather be camping. Well, really, because I'd rather not be out in the woods. And so I do remember that she would say, great, you want to go camping, Amy? Let me set you up on that. And I don't think she ever went with us, but she made sure we had that opportunity, and that's the important part. So, yeah, I remember the camp trips, but also day camp. Day camp is like really poignant for me, because we would hike down this path carrying our water in. We had to lug our water in, and we went back to this area that was, you know, thankfully kind of a treed area, and we had big fire pit, and we always sang and had our sit-upons. I think, yeah. Don't know if I still have my sit-upon, but I'm telling you, I might. And just really enjoyed all the things that we learned, and a lot of things practically. You know, the practical application. So, I mean, to this day, I'm probably a little more mechanical and thoughtful and understand, you know, how to do things and why would you go somewhere without a raincoat? What were you thinking? And so really enjoyed those times together. And then with a bigger cohort, right? Now it was a few girls from my troop and some others from, you know, around quite a large area. So that was also really enjoyable. Again, to have different experiences with different people and all have that same vision, mission, and, you know, helping and creating. So
absolutely. One of the things that I think is so powerful about Girl Scouting is the opportunities it provides for girls to try new things. You know, of course, that's a huge value of ours. Do you feel like, you know, since you grew up in this small rural town, do you feel like you had opportunities through Girl Scouting, or, you know, got to try new things that maybe you wouldn't have if you had not been a Girl Scout?
We did get to do some trips to, you know, different places in the area that I wouldn't have had the opportunity to do on my own at all. You know, they just weren't there. So that was fun. Again, our leader, you know, asked us where we wanted to go, or sometimes surprised us, and sometimes they were a good surprise. Sometimes we were really glad when she asked us where we wanted to go. But it was, yeah, that was. Yeah, definitely a bigger experience than I ever could have had, you know, being in one place, especially at those ages. You know, later once you can drive, right, and there's lots of things, but wow, if you can have all these experiences early on and then carry with you those relationships and what you've learned, it's pretty magical. So I think the Scouts definitely opened that as well as just the programs, you know, being able to get into something that, you know, I'll tell you, you know, I remember, you know, my mother like sewed our clothes and, you know, she had all these skills and we go, that's great, Mom, I don't want to do that. And then in Scouts it was like, uh-oh, gotta learn this. Well, fast forward a few years after that, and we're all responsible for attaching our own insignia on our Civil Air Patrol uniforms. Right. I can't tell you how many young, especially boys, that I taught how to do that in kind of cool ways, you know, not just like, so here, put this stuff on, that'll tack it on so it doesn't move while you're doing whatever, and oh no, I'm not doing that for you. Let me show you, let me teach you how to fish. And so, you know, yeah, absolutely, all the different programs you could get involved in. And maybe one thing that stands out in addition to that, let me teach you to sew, is that I also was a really shy kid, which no one will believe who knows me now, but people I grew up with will still know that. And I remember at a point in scouting where it was, okay, you're going to give a speech. I'm going to do a what? And so having the opportunity to have that, again, positive environment. I love the, you know, the courageous confidence, and I've always been a character. but those thoughts of stepping up, and I will tell you, even on those, as I reflect on, especially the courage and confidence, there are times where I absolutely have great clarity about times where I was confident because I had the support, maybe some experience, maybe an opportunity, and then times when it was courage that really helped me build more confidence, that the courage got me to say, I'm gonna face this fear and smile through it, that then I could build the experience, and whether I failed and somebody helped pick me up or whether I failed and I had to pick myself up, I then could do it and build the confidence from that. So I love how the Girl Scouts has all of those, courage, confidence, and character, because in so many organizations they focus on one part of it. You know, it could be a great character, it could be, you know, have courage, it could be, in fact, a client I worked with just recently has courage in their core values, and we talked about that, and I brought up confidence and talked about that, because as they were sharing with me, it felt like they were talking about confidence sometimes and courage others times. So I love the differentiation that the Scouts has made and really thinking about how those can be different.
I love how you described that, because I really haven't thought about them interacting in that way. You know, we always talk about courage and confidence and character, but you're so right. Sometimes when the confidence isn't there, it's the courage that pushes you through and, you know, gets you to build that confidence. So I absolutely love that. What are some other... Well, actually, I want to share with you, I was talking with one of our troop leaders the other night, and she was talking about how in Girl Scouts, girls get to build soft skills. Mm-hmm. And she said, and I actually don't like to call them soft skills. I like to call them power skills. Mm-hmm. Because when you know, some of the typical soft skills are, you know, like interpersonal communication and public speaking and, you know, those things that are more difficult to quantify. And so I'm wondering, like, you've touched on some of the power skills. I'm like going to trademark this. Shout out to our troop leader, Amanda, who shared this idea with me. But what are some of the power skills that either you see in yourself or you see as a result of the programming that Girl Scouts offers?
Yes, I think, you know, some of it is, you know, just being able to be a good friend, a good colleague, right? A good, you know, building camaraderie. And, you know, at those years when maybe it's before we think about what socialization really looks like, before we're in our cliques and please don't do that. And, right, before all that stuff happens, you know, Girl Scouts, you know, you can start out early. And I was a Brownie, right? So you get that chance to, you're probably this little gaggle of, you know, things running around. But you end up building that. You say, oh, wait, I'm going to see you every week. Not, yeah, you're in my school. Every day I'm going to see you. I'm going to see you next year. Oh, I don't see you next year. It's just a different cohesiveness that, that again, kind of calls us to actually use some additional skills, and maybe what I would say the emotional intelligence. People talk about that now, never was talked about then, right? The you know IQ, great, lovely, helps you get there. EQ, the emotional intelligence, absolutely just as important. And what I do in my work, absolutely is important. And what I help others to pick up. So I love the power skills. I once also heard it and had forgotten about this, haven't used it as much recently, as power tools. Ooh. That it's their power tools, which kind of, you know, really makes it like even like just dig it out of your tool belt, right? Out of your toolbox.
And yeah,
exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Well, but I had a battery on mine, right? So we're talking about, yeah, power. But yeah, it's, you know, it's really, yeah, it's, I think it's really important. Sometimes our words, maybe make biases across genders and things like that, that don't need to, you know, because everybody needs those. And maybe by virtue of having our leaders typically, I'm sure always, just really having great skills at building those, that cohesiveness with their scouts and all of that probably helps immensely. But yeah, the power tools, power skills, incredibly important. So again, for me, a little bit of the, you know, just even how to read an audience, how to, you know, how to see what other people are and care about what other people are thinking. You know, I talked about the troop leader getting us together to say, what do you want to do? Well, that's a huge negotiation, which could have turned into a fight, right? Because we only had so many opportunities a year, and we had been selling cookies and doing stuff to have enough funds to do some things. And then, you know, you really want to dig in and get what you want. And then when you learn the art of negotiation, you know, and the art of even advocacy, I can remember once, this was outside of scouting, but really what I had learned that I brought forward was from the Girl Scouts, that there was a conversation about advocacy and lobbying, and oh, I've never done that. And I said, are you kidding? You've never gotten into a group of people and tried to get them in? What? And I said, if nothing else, your parents, like, hey, take me to the mall. What? You know, well, I don't want to take you to the mall. Why would I want to take you to the mall? And you were advocating on your behalf, and you were lobbying for the effort that you wanted. And that I do remember as well. We had to all get together, and then that part of it where it's then go in unison. You don't want to go on a field trip and say, yeah, this isn't what I wanted. Because guess what you're going to, you know, as we always say, you're going to get what you search for. You know, so if you're searching for a bad time, you're going to have it. And so it was really fun to see how that at a very young age even gave us an opportunity to learn from one another and kind of get over it and nudge each other. If somebody said, well, that wasn't the trip I was going to go on. So, and we go, no, you're coming anyway. Come on, let's have fun. This is a team.
I love that. I love that. Power tools. I'm going to have to remember that one. So another thing that you touched on was some of the kind of gender stereotypes or gender norms that, you know, a lot of the world and a lot of society right now is kind of breaking down, especially for girls and women. You know, those expectations that you know, women are meant to do a certain type of role, or, you know, they're the ones who manage the home, and, you know, all of those stereotypes really are being, you know, the glass ceiling is being shattered. And it's really powerful to watch, and especially our girls. I have had conversations with even our littlest leaders, as I like to call them, our daisies and brownies, who, you know, they see a world of potential. They don't feel, you know, held back by what they should do or what they should become. And I think we're at an interesting crossroads where, you know, a lot of leaders in leadership roles at organizations today have had to be the ones, you know, cracking at that glass ceiling. And I definitely view you as one of those women who have, you know, have trod the path ahead of us. And I'm wondering if you can kind of share, you know, advice you would give to a girl, you know, about forging your own path regardless of some of those societal constraints or expectations, and you know, what that experience has been like for you.
Yeah, sure. You know, when we look at it from the outside, we can see it sometimes like, wow, we're kind of oppressing or, you know, channeling, you know, girls and women into certain areas. And, you know, from the inside, it's hard to feel. So I think the thing that I always focused on was just do what I want to do. Do what you're good at. Do what you're passionate about. And if that's, as a kid, I'd go out and work in the garden, and, that's great. I'd love being outside and, and doing those kinds of things, hence why I went to day camp. And or just really getting into fields that are non-traditional for women, but they're still career fields, and they're open, and now even more open in so many ways. So for me, I will say, again, great supportive environment of the Scouts, really supportive environment of my my parents as well. Do what you would like to do. The world is open. Just go earn it, So there's also that go earn it part of it. So I remember as a young kid, I was really good at math. And at a point, I think by seventh grade, I was in a group that we had a wonderful teacher who got us involved in math competitions all over the Flint area. He would get a vehicle, we would all go, and it was a bunch of guys and me, or a number of guys and me. It was a small group. And I just, I was thriving on that. I also had no one to talk with because, and I'm not sure that the guys talked to each other anyway. But it was really different. And at one point, this teacher, it was when my mother was starting the community ed program. And so, and we were on a split session from our schools. It was weird. And I would get out of school, but it was before my mom came in, and we were 5, 6, 7 miles away from the schools before she would drive in to work with the programs, which were predominantly in the afternoon and evening for community ed. I kind of had to hang out somewhere. And so after I played sports or did whatever, this teacher would say, well, hey, Amy, if I did my homework, taught other people to do their homework. And then he would leave in the math lab, which was basically the teacher's offices with all their, desks facing the wall and this big conference table in the middle. He would leave something on that table for me every day that if I wanted to, I could go in and pick it up. And it would be a quiz on something, or it would be, I probably was doing calculus by that. He would give it to me and I'd figure it out. It was a puzzle. And it was really cool to have that kind of attention. He's like, no, you, and he made sure, hang in here, keep doing it. Because again, when I'm meeting everybody else, it's, I'm 1% probably. There's probably 1% girls. So one day I went in and I picked up what he gave me at the math office, and usually I could just sit in there if a teacher wasn't in there. I'm surprised I didn't get hurt for being in their space, but I would just actually sit there, and I sat there and I picked up this multi-page thing, and I thought, what the heck is this? And Mr. Murdoch, what did you do to me? And he gave me some tough ones, but I did what I always did. I read through the whole test and then came back to the front. I was like, oh, maybe I can figure this out. So I finished this thing and kind of thought I had done okay, but I don't know. I'm not even sure what the heck I was doing. And I stuck it in his box on his desk, on his inbox, and I went home. Or I went to hang out with my mom at community ed. And later that evening, we get a call at home, and it's Mr. Murdoch, who I had answered the phone. He's, oh, is your mother there? And so I put my mom on the phone, and they have a conversation, and my mom comes back and says, come here, and I went back to the phone, and she said, Mr. Murdoch's asking if you had picked up and put that in his box. I said, well, yeah, yes, I did. And she said, so you did that today? Yes. You did that alone? Yes. Turned out it was computer programming in a year when there was one computer in our county. And it was at the Remedial Education Center, so all the schools could share it, and nobody could ever get any time. It was this big mainframe. I'm old. The next day in math class, he came over, and I didn't even know, the kids were probably all throwing spit wads and screaming because he was just focused on me. And he said, I tried to do that afterwards. Someone left that for me. That was not yours. I forgot to leave you something. Sometimes it would just be a wooden puzzle on the table. So, I thought he was leaving those for me. Anyway, he said, I couldn't even, he said, I had a hard time figuring out how, even watching what you did to get there, because they asked me if I might be able to learn this to help, and you already know this. And I was 12 years old. And so he said, so he ended up calling and talking to my mom and found that there was one commercial computer. The oldest commercial computer is the UNIVAC computer. Michigan Tech University had one. He found a summer program, 9 guys and me, from and the, the guys were from all over the, actually from different places in the country. It was very interesting. There were 10 students they accepted to this. I was 13 years old. And when my mom said, that's great, but we don't have money, he found a scholarship. And I didn't even know that. And so I troop up to Michigan Tech, and I've got punch cards and paper tapes, and yeah, they existed then. You could go to the Smithsonian, actually. Most of the things I programmed on in the 70s and 80s and 90s are in the Smithsonian. I found it, scared me. And so I just loved that, and I bought the T-shirt. I'm so into, you know, I could do this. This would be fun. And I went back and, you know, continued to excel in math and really wasn't as uncomfortable about that. I no longer counted how many women were in the room or how many girls were in the room, which is important, and all the male teachers, and there's no women. It doesn't matter. Like, it really became more about me and less about the environment. And so the next year, he got me a scholarship to go back. I think there were 6 of us that could go to the advanced. I learned like Fortran 3 and 4, and like now, I don't even know, it probably doesn't even exist, but 20 years later, they were at Fortran 77, and I was still programming in it. And so I went back the next year, and I thought, oh my gosh, this is great, and they're giving us really hard things to do, and I'm figuring it out, and I'm loving it. And I'm not competitive with them. They would all be going, oh, did you finish that? You know, and no, you can't have my punch cards. And so it turned out in the end, yeah, I got every assignment done and just had a blast. But 1 year older, I'm 14 years old, kind of looked around, again, having this great Girl Scout experience where everybody's camaraderie, and even if we don't like each other in school, we figure out how to like each other, you know, after we meet in Girl Scouts. And so I looked around and I thought, oh my goodness, these 6 guys, I've now spent weeks of my life with them. I don't even know if they know my name. I don't remember theirs. It's not like there wasn't a connection. And I thought, oh my goodness, I'm, you know, 1 year of socialization different, and I'm seeing things differently and how I want to interact in the world. So I thought, you know what? I really like teaching, because I, you know, I would often do that. It kept me focused on learning better so I could figure out how to teach things, and that kept me, allowed me to focus. And so I thought, you know what? I need to go somewhere where I'm going to get both the technical education and really, you know, humane education as well, whatever that might be. And so I didn't go to MIT like they sent me a lot of information for. I went to, you know, went to Kalamazoo College and got very specifically wanted to stay in the state, because my mother had some health issues by then. And so I wanted to stay local, had both psychology and education major. You all do that now. They didn't do that then. Like I said, had to carry my card all over campus to get signatures, and then computer and math minors, that some of which I took at Western Michigan University, because the classes didn't even exist at K-College at that point, and really put me on my sights for whatever I wanted to do. So I ended up using all of those skills, and I say in everything I do, even sometimes that abnormal psychology that I learned along the way, I end up using in whatever work I have to do to bring people together.
Wow, that is so powerful. And I love what you said about, you know, don't think so much about being the only woman in the room or the only girl in the room. I think that is so, so profound. So thank you for sharing that. Mm-hmm. And we've heard from you a little bit about some of the mentors in your life who have really kind of helped you along the way. Mr. Murdoch and your troop leader, both your mom and dad.
Mrs. Smith.
Yeah, Mrs. Smith. Oh, love it. I bet we're related. but, you know, I think it's so important, those mentors that we have in our life who can kind of guide us along the way. Can you share from your perspective, you know, why you think it is important for kids and girls especially to have some of those mentors in their lives?
Yes, a lot of it's because we can only see what we perceive, that, you know, ourselves, and then it's shaded by everything we do. We filter. Mm-hmm. You can't not filter. It's how you get through tough times. There's just, you have to. And so sometimes we filter things based on bias that's bad, but often we're filtering things just to see, you know, what helps us, you know, as well. So, so having more people around who can give you a reflection of yourself and help you see what that could mean is incredibly helpful. So, in addition to, you know, those I've talked about, there's in Civil Air Patrol, I had some one female mentor, but mostly males, because it's mostly males in the organization, who absolutely would say, Amy, you should be the wing commander, the state commander. You should be the wing commander someday. And I remember laughing. I was probably a lieutenant, you know. I'm laughing, and they said, no, your squadron is the fastest growing. You're doing, like, you're showing up at missions. Like, you've got people doing everything. They're really engaged. I'm like, well, yeah. I mean, why wouldn't you want to serve, you know, excellence, you know, integrity, honor, respect? I mean, why wouldn't you want to really get involved and help, you know, potentially save a life? And so I think that, you know, those, some of the things that they then helped with, in fact, how I ended up being the second in command in the state was coffee after work. And I remember saying, I'm going to be at work till 8 at night. And he said, that's okay, from a colonel when I was a major, I think, and a couple steps down. And he met with me and said, I really want you to put your hat in the ring for the second in command in the state. Okay, that's interesting, because it's been guys throughout. And he said, no, I really want you to do that. You've got the best. At that point, I was a group commander. I had all of the personnel, about 1,400 or no, that wasn't right. I had hundreds at that point in Wayne, Oakland, Macon County. So the biggest part of Michigan. And he said, no, he said, I'll tell you, he was the wing commander, he was about to become the wing commander, the state commander. And he said, no, I already know you've won the group award for leadership. I was like, wow, okay, you've got it across Michigan. I said, well, okay, that's nice. And he said, and we think that level, that echelon, may not exist in the future. We think that maybe we should flatten the organization a bit so that people have a little more connection to the state level, which got changed later. And so we really want you to step up, because we want you to, you know, help lead that and those efforts. And so a lot of arm wrestling, that negotiation I talked about earlier. And then he ended up saying, you don't understand if you don't, because I said, well, I need to think about it. I was just about to start an MBA program. Obviously I can't get out of work till late at night. I'm pretty busy. There's good stuff going on and I want to be part of it. And he said, yeah, but you don't understand. I'm going to sleep in your car tonight if you don't accept that, because my wife won't let me back in the house. Now, his wife wasn't part of the organization, but would show up to events and things, and I'd talked with her, and she had watched me, obviously, and he said, no, because, you know, it's just time. Like, we need to do this, and I'll be here to help you. And so I relented, said yes, kind of changed some of the plans I was taking, and became the second in command, and then the first, and then led Michigan a couple of years later, right during 9/11. Not exactly the best time, but we did some important missions that day and during my tenure. And he's still around. He's still a guy who will say, hey, you know, how are you doing? What can we help you with? So it's important to have those. And then throughout my time in Civil Air Patrol, it typically would be more the men who were supportive. One thing I would tell you, though, on the glass ceiling that we spoke about a minute ago, was just kind of a fascinating story where, just from a humble perspective, I'll tell you where I really made a huge mistake one day, which was when I was the national commander. And again, that guy who helped me be the state commander, Colonel Charles, he, you know, was right there for me. He was my national controller, so it really helped with the finance and all. And was, you know, that's the part of it where they stay with you. You know, it's not go. And sometimes you can't. Sometimes you have to just point and say, that's a great path for you, and then, you know, send him a note later to see. But he stuck with it. Anyway, I was the national commander. There are very few women. When I became the national commander, out of all the state commanders, all the U.S. plus Puerto Rico and District of Columbia, so 52 state wing commanders, as we call them, 8 regional commanders, the executive team, and all of us, plus my senior advisor to the Air Force, 67 members, one other woman. Now, the good news was, when I called a break at meetings, you know, because we had board meetings, and when I called a break at meetings, there was no line in our restroom. I used to laugh about that. I would say they'd all be over there lined up, and I would just be giggling, and the other female and I would kind of crack up about it. And then if we came out of the restroom together, they'd say, you had a meeting in there? And I would say, are you kidding me? Like, what's wrong with you? You know, you're all in there. Have a meeting in there. Oh, I'm sorry, you don't all fit. That's your problem. So we'd laugh about it. But anyway, I you know, things are going pretty well. I'm having a lot of work to do. And honestly, they didn't even have the insignia to go on my uniform, on my epaulette, because the female general officers is a little smaller because our blouse tabs are a little smaller. They had to stop the presses at the factory to build my uniform, which was fascinating. They also had a one of our regulations, you know, we're highly regulated, right? You know, lots of risk that to manage in an organization that's going out after somebody who obviously just had something bad happen. So we don't usually get to fly when it's nice out. It's when something happens. So anyway, we have this regulation, and in it, if you look, there's a special section for general officers. I'm the first female 1-star, a brigadier general. I became the first female 2-star. There is only now, as of a year ago, another general officer, and that was 10 years ago, female. So it's taken that long even to get a second. And so I was very aware that was our protocol. Are you kidding? I know that manual and regulation, the regulations inside and out. Well, one of my first, probably within a first month or two, I was at a conference, I'm speaking somewhere. Afterwards, a guy comes up to me and he calls me sir. He calls me general quarter, blah, 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 sir. To which heads spun around. And some of the colonels who reported, you know, to me were like, you know, looking like they were going to carry the guy out back. And I engaged with them. Hi, Captain. Good to talk with you. How are you doing today? And people were stunned that I didn't make anything out of it. I knew that the regulation said, because it had always said and it had always been right prior to that, the first time you address a general officer in Civil Air Patrol, you address them as general and their name. And after that, unless called otherwise, you address them as sir. Wow. And that took 6 months to change that. Yeah. I didn't change that. I thought, there are people who are supposed to be changing this. Mm. And it was my senior advisor to the Air Force that actually stepped in, grabbed somebody by the throat perhaps, and said, you will change that, and you will change that now before the next board meeting. And so they changed it to, after that, you will address them as sir/ma'am. And so I still had people coming up and saying sir/ma'am just to be funny, which it was only friends. And we laughed heartily about that. But talk about glass ceiling. So interestingly, I had an opportunity once to be a co-presenter at a keynote with General Ann Dunwoody. She's the first female to 4 stars in any organization, any branch of the military. Now, mine is a civilian auxiliary branch. 2 stars are as high as we go, and there's, I don't even know if there's been 5 of us maybe that have had them, even 2 across all the time. She's Army, retired Army, first to 4, but first in any service. And had an opportunity to talk with her and keynote with her. I was supposed to be doing a fireside chat where I was interviewing her, but I won't do this to you. But what she did is she started interviewing me. So there we are on the stage. I'm interviewing her. She's interviewing me. And I was like, what happened? How did I sign up for this? But it was great because she talked about it's the brass ceiling in the military. It's really hard to get through. And there may not be such a sound when you do it, like as the glass shattering. So I've always remembered that as well. Anyway, back to as I have this group of commanders, and they're all male, and the whole team, and all of a sudden, they are in charge of the wing commanders, the state commanders, and they have to bring those to me to approve. And they're bringing me all of these female candidates. Like, out of my 8 group commanders, we had 5 openings across the 52 states, 52 wings, and more than 75% were bringing in the female as the one. And I thought, oh no, they're just thinking I want the women. And I was so like, oh, Amy, you know, that's not right. That's reverse discrimination. It's discrimination in the wrong direction. So I huddled them together. There were 5 of them, I think, who had a candidate in right then. So I got them together, and instead of asking questions, and I know better because I love to ask questions to find out where things really are before I assert where I think they are. And I said, you know, listen, team, I really appreciate that you've brought in these great candidates, and they're great candidates, but I don't get to see who else you looked at. And so I'm wondering, you know, and turns out the 5 of them did not know that 4 out of the 5 of them had brought in females. It just happened all at once. Again, you know, and so I... I literally was kind of chastising them a bit. You know, now I want you to really think about this, and I don't want you to just do something because you think I want it, because I am not a yes, ma'am, like, please don't do that. And so they all had to tell me that day that it was my fault. Literally, one stepped up, still remember him, and he said, General, I think it's your fault that we have all of these top candidates. I said, what do you mean? He said, these are the best candidates in our state. These are women who have been in the organization for years and never been even thinking of themselves in those higher positions. And once they see you, they know they can. And I was incredibly humbled by that, both sides of it, the, oh my goodness, that I made a difference to them, how cool is that? And also the, I can't believe I was such an idiot, and I thought you guys were being, you know, jerks, and you were actually being the wonderful. And so we had quite a giggle about that. Actually, for the rest of my tenure, every once in a while they'd say, now, I just want to be clear, it's a woman, but she's really good. And so I did, as that new team of commanders came in, I did always meet with them. And when I met with them, I said, I do want to make one point perfectly clear, as all of these things are obviously changing in our organization. I'd like to not have to wait in line for a restroom on a break at a national board meeting. And so they would hold the door open for me, and we laughed about that. But yeah, that ceiling is there only if we let it be there. And it may be really hard, as General Dunwoody had said, to really break through it. And mine was not easy. I can sit here and smile and say it was a wonderful, humbling experience. And it was also sometimes a pretty rough experience. But we look at what we're trying to do. What do you want to do? Where are you going? What help can you give? What's your mission? And if that's where you're going and where you want to go, keep going. You know, you'll get tripped up a little bit. You know what? You know, we figure that out. And there will be somebody who helps you. And if they're not there watching, you might have to ask them for help. Mm-hmm. And that's something we need to get good at, too.
Yeah. That is such powerful advice, especially for our girls. You know, they're the ones who are going to change this world, make this world better. They do every single day. So I think that's such great advice for them. Thank you for sharing that story. So, Amy, why do you think that Girl Scouting is important for girls today?
Yeah, getting the opportunity to be in a cohort where you can maybe more easily share, you know, things that are, you know, different for the girl experience, different for the pulling that people will, you know, will give us to head to our better selves, and to, you know, remind ourselves always of the courage, confidence, and character, right? And the Girl Scout promise and all of that. That as we have those kinds of grounding events and grounding opportunities in our lives, we can learn the most from them. I mean, that just gives us a safe place, right? To really share and say, you know, or to say, hey, I'm being bullied, or hey, whatever. You know, I've just said, hey, sometimes it's tough and you got to keep going, but yeah, it doesn't mean you don't share and you don't get support and you don't get help. And, you know, so it's such a supportive, those support groups need to be there. And Girl Scouts is way beyond that, right? It's just such a learning experience, and you know, you can go with it where you want to go and make the most of it as you want to do.
Absolutely. Is there anything else that you were hoping to share that we didn't get to?
You know, I've loved the conversation. Brenna, you're great at this. I also maybe just a minute about what I get to do now, because after all this crazy, you know, experiences that I've had, small business, publicly traded, you know, leading all over the place in my EIEIO-ness, that, you know, I love what I get to do now, because I work just with leadership teams. And what I've found is I have, you know, it's just a blessing to have, you know, teams where I've literally had female CEOs who are, or owners who are seeking me out, like, whoa, you've done those cool things. Well, I want to spend some time with you. And I have all male leadership teams who seek me out and say, you know what, we realize we're not very good at pulling in diverse candidates, and so we want to work with you, because, you know, that's not what I do, oddly enough. What I do is I teach, facilitate, and coach a series of, you know, proven process, simple but fully complete six key areas of the business. We'll walk you through the journey and help you get better. I don't bring in the answers. I bring in the questions. The answers are always in the room and the leadership team. I just get more out of it. So I'm always fascinated by the why that people have, you know, that they know something needs to be different. They don't know what, but I just ask questions. I help them get there. But I love that, you know, they build a shared vision. They really get traction in the organization and they get healthy. And as we've talked about Girl Scouts, it's all of that. Where do you want to go? Envision bigger than you could, because you don't know if somebody's not there with a, you know, the bigger lens. And get traction. Hey, no, every week, like, you have a commitment, show up, you know, whenever you're supposed to meet, and be part of the team, right? Even if you're not, you know, you've got a lot of other things going on, you've got a commitment there. And then team health, it just is a byproduct of all of that. When you're surrounded by folks who care about you and want to head you in a good direction, you have a much higher probability of success, whatever that success is. So I think, you know, what I do today, I always think, why didn't I think about doing this earlier? And I thought, well, I had to have all these experiences, right, to get here. But, you know, I hope we have a lot of experiences for the scouts, and that they take advantage of getting involved, that the girls get involved and go where they can go.
Well, it was just amazing chatting with you today, Amy. And, you know, I've had the chance to get to know you well over the last few years, but today I got to learn just even more about you and, you know, how you got to where you are today. And really, you epitomize what we're trying to build in girls and what we're trying to instill in our Girl Scouts. And so I'm just really grateful to have spent the time with you today and to be able to share your story. So thanks for taking the time with me today.
Yeah, well, thank you. And you're, again, just, I love, you know, what you bring to Scouts and how you share with us the good things that are going on and engage us in wonderful ways. So thank you, Brenna, for all that you do here.
Well, to all of our listeners, I hope you enjoyed today's episode and learning from Amy about some of her life experiences and how Girl Scouting has impacted her and the value that she places on Girl Scouting for girls today. I hope that you will share this episode so that people can hear about all the wonderful things that girls get to experience because of Girl Scouting and the paths that are possible for girls, especially when they have that role model, that that trailblazer ahead of them, showing them what is possible. So give this episode a share, leave us a rating and a review, 5 stars preferred, and you know, help us to spread the word about the wonderful things happening in Girl Scouts. Until next time, be bold, be brave, and leave each place a whole lot better than you found it. Change the world, come with me.